Welcome to the very first episode of the Foos Podcast, a podcast by basketball fans for basketball fans. I'm super hyped to finally get this going. We've been talking about this for a few months. Episode one, finally got around to it. Every week, we'll be talking to NBA with news, players ranking, hot takes, especially the upcoming playoffs. Since this is episode one, let's take a second to introduce ourselves so you guys know who you're listening to. I'm Matthew. I'm from New York. I go to school in Maine. I'm a senior, and unfortunately, I'm a Bucks fan. It's been a rough few years.
I'm Ziad. You can find me on Instagram. Instagram user ZodHub. I'm a Celtics fan, but right now I'm a Nets fan. I'm with them through the rebuild right now. I go to Penn State, and I'm a chemical engineer. So yeah, I love watching me some hoops.
So I'm Preston, but a lot of my friends know me as Kiroshi Tarantino, or just Kiroshi, Roshi, or for the most part, it's K2. I've been a Hawks fan for probably about 12 years now, so it's been a lot of misery, a lot of suffering, a lot of limbo and purgatory, but overall, I'm just a big lover of basketball. I'm from Atlanta, but I'm in live from Boston right now, so yeah, I'm just glad that we could get the pod started.
My name is Devon. Instagram user 25 lighters. Shout out Instagram user ZodHub. We appreciate you, big bro. From Atlanta. Big Hawks fan. Huge DeAndre Hunter hater. He's actually not good at basketball. Yeah, I'm just trying to, you know, just excited for the podcast. Excited to talk some hoops with you guys today. Nothing but love.
And Devon is a special guest right now because Toby and Zay run on foosball time.
Yeah.
This podcast was inspired by our group chat and then foosball. And so, yeah, they're a little late. They run on a different time than us.
You know,
we're waiting on them for an hour and a half. So
for all of our young men out there, you know how some of these other young men get, you know, just being late. So no time management.
It's currently 11:30. We got on the call at 10. So, hey, always like better than never.
Yep.
So I'm off with our first talk. Let's talk about the Oklahoma City Thunder. So I feel like every day I've kind of seen a new post about how good they are. Currently, they have the second highest rating of all time behind the 96 Bulls. They have a top five defensive rating of all time. They got more 15-point wins than losses. Yet people in the NBA are still doubting this team as serious contenders. And just yesterday, they lost to the Rockets by 15. So we can start with Preston. Do you think the Thunder have a weakness, or do you think they can be beaten in a seven-game series?
Well, okay. So I believe that the only way that a team could beat a Thunder team of this magnitude, it would take an all-time collapse, honestly, because from what I'm seeing from the Thunder right now is they should be mentioned with some of the greatest teams of all time. I'm pretty convinced at this point. Because when you look at them, you know, they have one of the highest point differentials of all time. Obviously, like you said, one of the highest net ratings of all time, one of the highest offensive ratings, and one of the highest defensive ratings of all time. I mean, this is one of the most structurally sound basketball clubs in, I think, NBA history. Like, sometimes I'll just catch their games with passing. I didn't catch the Rockets game last night because I was on my flight. But what I'm seeing from this team is they're a very good, well-structured all-around team. Great shooters, great defenders. I mean, they're great down low. They have great bigs. I mean, it's just crazy perimeter defense. I mean, defense at the point of attack. I mean, it's just smothering. It's just smothering. And then with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander at the helm, I mean, a guy like that who can get to his spot literally at will, like he's having one of the greatest offensive guard seasons of all time, on top of being one of the best guard defenders in the league. I mean, I feel like the sky's the limit for this team. And in order for somebody to really come in and like be able to take them in a seven game series, I would really think it would take like an all time collapse, like just like a complete departure from everything we've seen from them this season. So, I mean, yeah, I have them winning it all this year. They're my favorite this year. So I guess we'll just see how that plays out.
Yeah. What do you think?
Going off of what K2 said, I mean, it's going to be hard to beat the Thunder, like really hard to beat the Thunder. You have Shai, who's playing out of his mind, MVP season. That's another conversation, but regardless of if you think he's MVP or not, he's top two in the league and most certainly is one of the most valuable players we've seen in a while. the way he is able to just score so efficiently is something I have not seen in a while. And I don't think it's going to be an easy feat. But let's like really look at the teams that are in the West that are competing. You have Nuggets, you have the Timberwolves, you have Clippers, you have the Lakers, you have the Grizzlies, Warriors, Rockets. The only weakness I could say with this Oklahoma City Thunder team is when they go against forwards that are slightly more aggressive, that is where their main weak point is. Whenever they face, like we saw last year in the playoffs, PJ Washington gave them work. Like he really gave them work. And even this season, like they played the Mavericks again earlier this season. PJ Washington gave them work. It was in like January, I'm pretty sure. Just like a few days ago, they played the Rockets. I don't remember when that was. That was like a few days ago. They got killed on the board by Jabari Smith. Whenever they play forwards that are much more aggressive, it seems like it's a whole different story. And that's basically what I think is going to be the only thing, like the only chance, of like the only hope teams will have to beat the Thunder. Because when you look at it, they have a historically great defense, historically great offense, and historically efficient offense. They're not going to be beat by guard play. They have so many elite guarding guards. It's like, it's impossible. You are not going to beat them with elite guard play if you do not have that aggressive play at forward, if you don't have that aggressive, like that amazing center. So what I think, Nuggets, you have Jokic. You have Aaron Gordon, who he can score. He can score efficiently as well. And we know him as, you know, someone that can shoot all right. Not the best shooter, but, you know, he can get downhill really, really well. Michael Porter Jr., amazing three-point shooter. He can be very aggressive. And we've seen the Nuggets in the playoffs. Aggressive team. What do you even do? It's the Nuggets. It's Jokic. Like, they're going to be hard to beat no matter who you are. Timberwolves, great matchup for them. They have, like, I think that's probably, like, the best matchup we'll see. Clippers, amazing defensive team. But I think they're lacking that really aggressive forward. Kawhi. It's Kawhi Leonard. He's won before. We've seen it before. That's going to be an interesting matchup. I'm not sure how they'll fare against the Thunder necessarily. Lakers, I mean, what do you even say about the Lakers? I think the Thunder handle that. Grizzlies, they just fired their head coach. We got to really see them find a new identity after. We don't really know much about them right now because it's like a lot can change. Warriors winning a lot, but it's the Thunder. And I don't think their play style is enough for the Thunder. But yeah, like I said, Timberwolves are probably the best matchup, in my opinion. I don't think the Timberwolves are the best team. I just think they have the best chance at beating the Thunder because we've seen them beat them at least twice this season. And granted, it's the regular season. We've seen them get beat by the Timberwolves. The Timberwolves kind of have them figured out. And so I would love to see that matchup most, for sure.
I think it's a great point you're bringing up about size being kind of their lack of weakness, or their weakness, because while you do have Hardenstein and while you do have Chet, I think especially as you see yesterday, it's kind of like very big guards, or not guards, forwards and also centers who can get offensive rebounds are kind of their weakness. Like, Steven Adams is not an elite NBA player by any means, but especially on the offensive end yesterday, he was, like, cooking Hardenstein, and especially cooking Chet. And I think while Chet is a very good player, I think his inexperience sometimes shows, especially, like, last night, for example, I was watching, and Sengun was cooking him. Like, he definitely in the playoffs is probably a bigger, weaker link, especially when smarter, bigger teams can probably try to take advantage of him. Devon, what do you think? What are some qualities of the Thunder that make them beatable, if you think there are any?
Oh. I don't know, man. I think the Thunder are going to be a hard team to beat. I think what makes the Thunder so good is that everybody in the starting five can really play two ways so well. Like, you know, Shea is a top-tier defender. Mm-hmm. J-Do, man. When Chet went down, we were seeing J-Do. He was guarding 1-4. He was out there. He was putting up some great defensive numbers.
Yep.
Something that we don't see from a lot of people, from a lot of other teams. So I think that's really what makes them, down the stretch, that's what's going to make them so hard to beat. And then, yeah, like also y'all were saying with SGA, he can really get to all his spots at will. It seems like, you know, if you need a bucket, he can get you a bucket at any time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his footwork, I think especially, his footwork in the post, once he gets to his spot, man, you don't know what he's going to do. He can create for himself in any way. So that being said, I do like your point about the big forwards. You know, I think that makes the most sense. I think the Timberwolves do have a good matchup. I think of the Nuggets, though. I think the Nuggets, we've seen the Nuggets turn up in the playoffs before. You know, they always haven't been the highest seed. They've always been in contention. They always haven't been the highest seed, but we've seen them turn up before. So especially with Jokic, I think Jokic, obviously, top two, him and Shea, top two for MVP. I think players like that can really elevate a team in the playoffs to heist out, you know, maybe we won't expect, even though we expect a lot from the Nuggets. So maybe the Nuggets would be a good team to maybe knock them off if anybody can.
Yeah, and going off that, I think it's worth noting the Thunder play at a really high pace. And I think like a team like the Lakers, they just won't stand a chance. The Thunder play way too fast for the Lakers. They're still somewhat new, although it's been like a lot of games. They're getting players back from injury. They got to figure themselves out a little bit. The Clippers, they're like one of the best defensive teams. Like they have like one of the highest defensive efficiencies over their last five games. They're really putting it together. And it's just a matter of finding a rhythm with the team all together. The Grizzlies, they also play with a really high pace. They're like over the last five, they haven't been as good offensively and defensively in terms of efficiency. But, you know, that's expected. They just fired their coach. We'll see. But, you know, the Thunder are going to be a hard team to beat. Like, I couldn't tell you there's a single team that I for sure will beat them. I don't really think they're beatable by most of these teams. Like, I don't think it's possible, especially when you have to go against a team like that in a 7-game series. I don't think that's possible. I don't think that's happening.
Yeah, kind of piggybacking off of that, when you look at the Thunder and their overall efficiency, because as a team, they're shooting about 48% from the field, 38% from three. And then on the road, they're shooting about 47% from the field and 36% from three. So when you take that efficiency and you take that pace and you also take that defense, they're like one of the most defensively sound teams maybe ever, like let alone in the NBA, maybe ever. Because let's just say you get the ball right here at the top of the key, then you have to get past Shea. He has some of the best footwork for a guard defender that we've seen. And then if you do get past Shea, then you get the J. Will help off the wing. You get the J. Will help. And if you can maneuver past the J. Will help, then you have to get past Chet. He guards the low post. And then if you do, in fact, get past Chet, then you got a big body in Isaiah Hartenstein in the middle. So that's a very tough team to score on. It's a very tough team to score on. And they're also very efficient. They play at a very high pace, like Ziad said. And I mean, they're fourth in the NBA in scoring. And they're, you know, first in steals, second in blocks, and they're fourth in overall field goals made. I mean, this is just a great team, like point blank. This is just a great team. I mean, very well-rounded team. And, you know, for teams to really have a hope of beating this team, I mean, you're going to have to do a lot of scouting, a lot of game planning, and you're going to have contingencies on top of contingencies, because they're very prone to just going off whenever. I mean, this is one of the deepest teams we've ever seen. You got Shea, got J. Will, you got Chet, you got the other J. Will, you got Lou Dort, Isaiah Joe, Cason Wallace, you got Alex Caruso when he gets back healthy, you got Aaron Wiggins, you got guys like that. I mean, it just rounds out the entire roster, and I mean, it's gonna get scary, bro. It's gonna get scary.
Nah, because it's actually crazy. Like, for their pace, it's crazy. It's actually terrifying how efficient they are for how fast they play. Like, that should not be happening. Like, that is not real, actually. But yeah, that's really all I have to say on the Thunder right now. So
this is a question, I guess, for all of you guys. Part of the reason why the Thunder kind of flamed out last year was that secondary guys like J-Dub weren't really performing since it was their first playoffs. And a lot of people kind of brought up the idea of, if you kind of take Shea out of the game and force these guys like Chet or J-Dub, who don't have a lot of playoff experience, to try to be the guy, that's how you might beat the Thunder. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
I'll start with this one. So honestly, I think their team is a lot more different than it was last year. One, they got a lot more experience. Two, they added a guy like Hartenstein, who is so much more impactful to this team than the team they were last year. So, like, I think it's more beyond them just, like, letting J-Dub, and Chet, like, do more while Shea's off the court. They just rounded out their team so much better. Like, guys like Aaron Wiggins, I think their rotation is just really, really elite. And I don't think it's going to be a problem for them this year. Like, I really don't. The way J-Dub's been playing, if he's not able to give you that, like, that high-tier, high-power offense, you know he's an all-NBA defender, really great defender. He's always going to give you something whenever he can. And it's like, I don't think they're going to have that problem this year, because all those guys, if they're not going to play good offensively, they're going to give you the best defense you've probably seen in a long time. So it's like, You know, they'll get their points anyways, whether it's steals, blocks, scoring in transition, you know, taking advantage of teams in those ways. You know, Mark Daigneault, he's doing a really good job with the team. You know, they're doing a lot of things we haven't seen like ever. And, you know, shaving off the court, I don't think it's been too much of an issue for them this year because that bench is different. It's different. It's truly it, like the way Andrew Wiggins plays, so much value for a rotation player in one. And it's just something you're not going to get in a lot of players, like really. And that it just won't be beat. I don't think there's anything that can stop him. Like there's really nothing.
And, you know, just going off what he said, I mean, you look at a guy like Jalen Williams, he's averaging 21 points per game and then, you know, 5 and 5 on 48% from the field and 36 from three. I mean, those are pretty damn good numbers. I mean, he's, you know, hyper efficient guy. And what, I don't know how that offense would look if, let's say, God forbid, Shea goes down with injury and they have to run the offense through Jalen Williams. I mean, honestly, given the numbers now, I feel like I can trust him with that number one spot. And when you look at a guy like Chet, when you look at a guy like Chet, I mean, as a defender, I am pretty confident in saying that he is a top five defender and the sky is the limit for him and his defensive potential. So, I mean, when you, even if you take Shea out of the equation, again, this is still a very young team, still a very fast team, still a very efficient team. So, I mean, if they could kind of take a step back and then kind of shift their game plan to playing more team-oriented basketball, like outside of Shea, I still think this could be a very successful team because without Shea, this is still a very above-average team. And sometimes they use that against Shea to say, oh, how could he be the most valuable player of a team this good? But at the same time, Shea is a very, very big part of this team's identity. And when you have but that's the good thing about having a team that has multiple identities. They could have multiple different game plans. Like I said, contingencies on top of contingencies. And like he said, very good point with a guy like Ihart who brings, you know, defensive and offensive impact. He's one of the best offensive rebounding centers, I think, in the NBA. And so, again, very young team, very inexperienced. I feel like last season getting to the second round, but losing to the Mavericks, that did a lot. And that was a big teaching moment for them. So I feel like they're going to kind of build off that and build off the season that they just had. And I feel like they could make a run, and they will make a run, definitely. And so I'm just very excited to see that.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Mr. Kuroshi. I really appreciate your insights there. I think that for the Thunder, I think that they're, when thinking about them last year and this year, I think they've just elevated every aspect of their game. I think that Shea has become an even better offensive engine than he was last year, and he's elevated his defense. I think that J-Dub is an even better offensive player this year, and he's all-NBA tier defense. I think that Aaron Wiggins, he can break out at any time, it seems like, from the way he's been playing. Chet, great defender. And he's very efficient on the offensive side of the floor, too. The whole team, I think, when thinking about them between last year and this year, they're just so much better in every aspect. And I think that even if you minimize the offensive engine that Shea is, I think that other players will be able to step up and give you maybe 10 to 15 points, maybe that you wouldn't have expected. And that's going to get them the dub, especially with the defense that they're going to give you night in and night out. Their defense is going to be on point every night. That's something that will never waver. So I think that the Thunder are going to be good, even if Shea maybe doesn't give you 35 a night. I think they'll be good regardless.
Yeah, I think you definitely have a point there. I mean, like I feel like most of the time when we talk about teams fizzling out in the playoffs, we're talking about players that we know as like offensive igniters, and you know they score a lot. But one thing we don't ever talk about is what if players don't like keep up their level of defensive performance. And so, like, whenever we're talking about these players fizzling out, we're always talking about them in the sense that they're not scoring as much. But one thing we never mention is, like one thing that's different for the Thunder team is these players that we're talking about possibly fizzling out, like Shea, J-Dub, like these, like being able to step up with Shea off the court, these players are some of the best defensive players in the league as well. So it's not like they're just bringing one thing to the game that if they don't do this, they can't succeed. Like, they can bring that elite level of defense and be just fine. And it's like, they have so many plates, so many different players they can get some production from, and so many different players they can get good defense from. So it's like Shea being on the bench, they have other ways to generate these points. They have, like, there's so many different combinations that rotation has, and it's just, I still don't think there's anything that can be done to stop this team, like, truthfully, because there's just so much defense, and that's not something that you really think about when you're talking about level of performance declining. And that's something every single player has, no matter if they're playing good offensively, no matter if they're playing bad offensively, they still have all NBA defense at every position, like, literally.
Yeah, and I feel like one of the, like, two of the biggest key players in this run is, if he could get back healthy, Alex Caruso. Alex Caruso is one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA, and, you know, he's great moving his feet, and he definitely has a lot of experience on some of those Lakers teams, you know, the Lakers championship run. And then, you know, he also has good experience playing next to guys like Lonzo, even though Lonzo was pretty much almost hurt the entire time Caruso was there. But, you know, he learns off guys like those, even at such an older age. I feel like he's definitely one of the older guys on the Thunder. And so if you could get him back healthy, then, you know, he could kind of be somewhat of a defensive anchor, even with Shea out of the game. And another key guy for this Thunder team going into the playoffs is the other Jalen Williams. And so I feel like if you could essentially run an offense through him as a point forward, that's what's so dangerous about this team, is that you have multiple guys, maybe like 6, 7, 8 guys that you could either run an offense through, run a defense through, or both. And I mean, you could get a triple double from this guy on any given night. And so, you know, when you look at this team and when you look at that depth, I mean, yes, Shea is their leader, and don't get me wrong, Shea is probably, like, you know, one of the biggest impact guys in the league, and he's definitely the de facto number one guy. But given the depth of this team, like, if they just decide in practice one day, hey, you know what, let's catch these guys off guard, let's run the game through J Will 1, and then we could run the defense through, you know, J Will 2, and then Alex Caruso, or then, you know what, maybe we'll just switch it up entirely, maybe we'll go in, draw some guys off, and then we could find our shooters out. Because, again, this is one of the best three-point shooting teams in the league, on top of elite defense, on top of scoring everywhere else on the floor. I mean, like, this is stuff that I see, and I mean, I don't really think I've seen a team like this in my lifetime. Because when you, at least, like, when you look at the Golden State Warriors, right, that was a great defense, but it was so clearly ran, the defense was so clearly run through Draymond Green. Draymond Green was undisputed defensive anchor. No debate. When you look at a team like OKC, okay, you have Shea, you have J Will, you have Chet, Hart, Caruso, you got other J Will. I mean, you got guys, Isaiah Joe, Cason Wallace, they could come out with the three. I mean, this is just an unprecedented level of basketball consistency and basketball soundness for a team. And this is just, I mean, again, I really feel like this is their championship to lose this year.
Great. So before we go on to our next segment, from 0 to 10, how confident are you guys that the Thunder are making the NBA Finals?
Making the NBA Finals, I'd say probably like an 8. And that's, if you ask me, like most other teams, I'd say like 4, 5. So, like, that's really good.
Yeah. I would probably say 9, just because anything could happen. Obviously, there's no certainty of any team making the finals. But, I mean, all-time team, you know, they're young, but now they have that experience. I mean, you know, Shea was playing in the bubble, right? A lot of these guys were in high school when Shea was in the bubble, right? And Shea has experience built up over these years, even back when he was playing for the Clippers. So it's like, when you take that experience and you factor it in with the fact that it's a young team, so they could play at a high pace. I mean, again, sky's the limit. I'll give them a 9 out of 10 just because there's no such thing as a basketball certainty. But I just don't see how any other team in the West could knock them out so early.
Yeah, give me 9.5. Give me 9.5 because... 9.5?
9.5 though?
I don't see none of these other teams.
Very high praise.
Because that means that it's going to take a miracle for another team to beat the Thunder in seven games.
Yeah, I respect it. I'm not going to lie, I respect it.
How many games have the Thunder lost this year in an 82-game season?
Yeah, it was like maybe 10.
Exactly.
They've lost one game back.
Exactly.
Back.
Yeah.
Which is so insane. So we're going to sit here and act like a team can go to seven with the Thunder, beat them in a seven-game series?
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think so.
That's true.
It's all good points. And we'll see how this team does in the postseason. So up next, we're going to talk about the firing of Taylor Jenkins. Although it's not the best season with Grizzlies with all the injuries, he's undeniably a good coach and has turned them into one of the premier young squads in the league. And especially with how late it is in the NBA season, it's honestly kind of looking like Jenkins is a scapegoat for the Grizzlies season. So the idea of being a scapegoat for an NBA team isn't new. We've seen it a lot in the past few years with guys like Frank Vogel, Mike Brown, or Monty Williams getting fired for simply one disappointing season, despite having a lot of success. So, we'll start with you. First, what are your thoughts on why the Grizzlies fired Jenkins? Where do they go from here? And then next, do you think he's just another scapegoat, and the NBA coach who's a scapegoat?
I honestly don't get it, and here's why. The Grizzlies, with Taylor Jenkins as their head coach, I had to do my research, 250 and 214 with him as their head coach, which is not generational. They're not the Thunder or anything, but that's still pretty good for a team that was not always the best team, that a team that hasn't been, you know, really in the limelight. They just finished getting all their pieces together. They were 44 and 29 this season with him as head coach. And then you fire that guy because you don't like where the offense is going. Like, you don't like the direction the team is taking offensively. Do you know, like, what firing a coach does to a team, like, midseason? You're, like, there's not enough, like, success is not guaranteed. And you're not, like, you're not guaranteeing your team anything by firing a coach and bringing someone in new. And their new guy, I forgot his name. I looked him up a little bit. He's from somewhere in Europe. He was brought over because they liked what he was doing over there. His resume looks pretty good. I should probably look more into him. But I'm not sure if bringing in a new coach is like the best thing to do when you're in a playoff spot. Not even at that point, they were a playoff team. Is that really what you want to do? You know, you could impact your team's morale. You know, players are gonna, you could impact the way players think about the team. There's so much that could go into it. I don't really think it's like the best option. And while I don't know if I would call him a scapegoat, that could definitely be a part of it. Their team is really good though. Like, you have Jalen Wells, you have Ja Morant, you have Jaren, you have Desmond Bane, you have Luke Kennard. He hasn't been doing the best recently, but you know, really, really known 3-point shooter, been doing really good. Santi Aldama, and Santi, I think, is a very impactful player off the bench for the Grizzlies. Zach Edey, like, they have a really, really, really complete team. And 44 and 29, like, are we gonna sit here and act like that's a bad record? Like, is that a record that a coach needs to get fired for? Like, what are we really doing? And I understand you don't like where the offense is going, but at the end of the day, you're winning games. So what are we even doing? Like, I don't understand the move. And I think we've seen this a lot in history. You know, like, Monty Williams made it to the finals in 2021 with the Suns. And then I'm pretty sure he won 64 games in a season, like 60 plus games in a season with the Suns. And he got fired. Where are the Suns now? Not even in the play-in currently. Then again, they lost in the finals, and or like they lost in the Western Conference. They lost, I think this was two seasons ago, or last season, 2023. They played the Nuggets, the year the Nuggets won the finals. They lost to the Nuggets. Are we really firing our coaches for making the finals and then losing to finals winning teams? And when they're showing us, hey, we're this close to finally winning, we just need to make these changes. You know, look at other coaches. Steve Nash, you can make an argument that he had a deserved firing. He was 94-67 with the team. He he had a chance at the finals appearance if KD wasn't like a size 17 shoe. Like, he had a really, really, really generational team there. And it all just disbanded. And that was not on him. The reason the Nets disbanded was, it had nothing. I mean, it could have had something to do with Steve Nash. But it was all the politics around, like, Kyrie Irving, him getting suspended for his views. KD and Harden wanting out. They didn't like the management of the Nets. And Steve Nash got fired because the management made them, the players, want to leave. And he purely got scapegoated. Look at Adrian Griffin last season. 30-13, he got fired as the Bucks head coach. They were saying he lost the locker room, but when you have your best player Giannis Antetokounmpo saying he is surprised by the firing, what are we doing? Like, what are we doing? 30 and 13. What could he be doing so wrong to where you're not satisfied with a 30 and 13 start? Where did the Bucks end up last season? Where did they end up? They finished that season like 19 and 20 after firing Adrian Griffin. So it's like, what are we doing? Look at David Blatt. They were like 53 and 29 when he got fired. They won the finals next year, but you know, they have LeBron. That's a good squad. And you could always justify these things. He got fired like the next season at 30 and 11, and that was when the Cavs made that 3-1 comeback. You know, he the team was good, but obviously that firing got them a finals ring. So I mean, I guess that worked. Look at Mike Budenholzer, Nick Nurse, all these coaches that just get fired. They go to new teams. They get fired from that team. It's like you're just bringing in a whole cycle of coaches, this, that, and the other. And it's like, what are you expecting coaches to do with like 1 year to show that they can win the final? Like, what are we doing? I don't get it. I really don't. And I know Taylor Jenkins had like 5 years as a head coach, but like he didn't always have like a playoff contending team. Like, they just built this. Like, this is still a somewhat new team. Ja was suspended. Ja was hurt. Jaren Jackson has been spending a lot of time injured. Like, what are we doing? You are 44 and 29. I don't get it. I really don't.
Diva, what are your thoughts on this?
I mean, in a situation where a coach gets fired, it's always going to be some controversy about whether or not it was deserved, unless the team has been struggling for a long time. Now, this is actually the exact opposite with the Grizzlies, because the Grizzlies seem to be on an upward trajectory right now. So it's like, I think you have to look at, especially offensively, who are their offensive key pieces? I think that obviously Ja. I think Jalen Wells, very, very promising offensive piece. And obviously you have Desmond Bane, great three-point shooter. And then who was Jaren, the guy from
Aldama?
Aldama. That's what I was thinking about. I mean, he's had a few games where he put up some crazy 3-point numbers. So I think when you think about that, you have to think about, okay, if we didn't fire him, what would the next offseason have given us?
Yeah.
I think time with these players would have, I mean, I don't see why they wouldn't have continued to improve. I think that the firing did seem a little premature, especially with their season this year being so good. It just seemed like they were on the right track. I think another offseason, especially with Jalen Wells, I'm very, very high on Jalen Wells. I think he's going to be really good. I liked him in college and I like him now. So I think another offseason would have been great. I think the firing was a little premature. Yeah. Would I call it a scapegoat? Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Bro got scapegoated. So, I mean, yeah, that's really all I had to say about it.
Yeah. And so when I think of scapegoating coaches, okay, so since I've started watching basketball, my favorite team, the Hawks, have had 5 head coaches. They've had, it was Larry Drew, I believe, and then Coach Bud. Then they moved on to Lloyd Pierce, Nate McMillan, and now we're on Quinn Snyder. So when I think back to the coaches over the years.
Devon, what you think about Nate McMillan, bro?
Bro. No. No.
Yo.
Bro's a terrorist.
Anyway, all right, what were you saying, Preston?
So when I think back to coaches and what, you know, short leashes they have, I think back to the 2014-15 Atlanta Hawks season, like most, you know, seasoned NBA fans, they think back to that 60-win team that didn't make the finals. And so back then, I feel like the difference between then and now with the timetable that coaches are given, I feel like back then, a good season could buy you 3 more seasons. Now, a good season maybe gets you 1 more. Or 2 if you're like a solidified great coach. So, you know, when you look at a guy like Coach Bud, I mean, this team, they won, you know, 60 games in 14-15, and he was the head coach until 2018, right? And then you take a guy like Lloyd Pierce, Trae Young's first coach. And so they were 63-120. That's a 34% win percentage for that team. Obvious bad coach. He didn't know what he was doing with his rotation. His game plans were all the way off. So, I mean, you can't really go, you don't really go a lot of places with a coach like that. And so, I mean, it's just really a difference in coaching and how you view, like, how you believe coaching is important to a team. And
yeah.
Also, a big part of it is whether or not a coach has won over their locker room, because one of the worst things that could happen to you as a coach is losing the locker room. If you have players on your team that feel like they don't respect you or they don't have to respect you, I mean, you're seeing it right now with KD and Coach Bud. Coach Bud is so obviously out of there after this season, dude. There might have never been like such an obvious firing in like NBA history at this point. I mean, but at the same time, on the other side, when you look at it, I mean, a lot of coaches get a lot of coaching jobs purely off reputation. Mm-hmm. Like Tom Thibodeau, very overrated coach to me, but you will never see Tom Thibodeau without a job. I'll tell you that much.
It's actually insane. I think we have to start looking at the front offices, because the amount of coaches that just get recycled every single year, it's like, this guy has been fired from 5 different teams. What makes you think he's going to make your team any different? Exact and you're just going to fire him the year after? Like, what are we even doing? We have to start looking at front offices for these things, because you're bringing in the same coaches expecting different results. Yeah. Like, it does not make sense.
And then you also have a guy like Doc Rivers. Doc Rivers has won one championship. He won one championship that has bought him 17 years as an NBA coach. and then you want to know what they, hold on, bro. They have Doc Rivers as their head coach. And then they added Darvin Ham onto the coaching staff. Are you kidding?
Yo, Matthew, how do you feel about the Doc Rivers being out and Darvin Ham
right now? He's
that boy went dark.
He's tweaked out.
He went dark.
Bro, yo, okay. we made him lose it. Like, he lost it.
And so, and
bro, brought up Darvin Ham and
he was out of here. It does not make sense. It genuinely does not make sense. Like, you're just it, like, somebody please try to reason with me. Somebody think on the other side. Somebody try to make me reason why the Bucks thought, let's fire our coach that is 30 and 13. For Doc Rivers. Somebody please convince me that it was a good idea. Please, just try.
Bro, Doc Rivers got a chip.
Like, that has to be the whole conversation they're having.
Like, when you think of Doc Rivers, right? All the 3-1 leads that he's blown, you know, all the historical collapses he's been a part of. I mean, when you think of the Adrian Griffin firing, I mean, the next best step wasn't, okay, Doc Rivers. What? That should get you fired as an executive. That should get you fired. I mean, I'm not saying Doc Rivers is like some sort of terrible coach or anything. I mean, the guy can coach, but it's just like, if you have a guy in Giannis Antetokounmpo, this is legitimately, you could not realistically name me 5 better or more accomplished power forwards in NBA history than Giannis, and he just now turned 30. And so when you have a guy like that, you don't, your next course of action isn't to pair him with a guy like Doc Rivers Darvin Ham as the backup with his hands in his pockets walking around. Yeah, yeah, Giannis, good. Yeah. Go hard on them dudes. Salute.
go hard on them dudes, bro. Someone clip that chat.
We have to start being serious. Like, if you want a good championship team, it all starts with coaching. I mean, look at Monty Williams last year. I mean, I didn't even watch that much Pistons basketball, but in the few, you know, Pistons games that I did watch, I could see, I mean, he didn't know what he was doing with his rotations. He was playing guys that had no business playing. Meanwhile, some of the best guys on his team were riding the bench. Like, guys like that, I mean, they're not going to take you very far. I mean, that's a good roster that they have constructed up in Detroit. And Monty Williams found a way to give us, like, the worst possible rotations for the Pistons. And so, and also, another point that I have, coming off of Lloyd Pierce, the Hawks had Nate McMillan as their interim coach. And so, going off of Nate McMillan, look at this nigga, Devon, that boy, and what he stressed out. I even mentioned his
Matthew,
name.
Matthew, mute real quick.
But, you know, coming off of Lloyd Pierce going into Nate McMillan, the Hawks made the Eastern Conference Finals with Nate McMillan. And I, like a lot of Hawks fans, I was very excited about that. I'm like, yeah, this is our guy for the future. You know, Nate McMillan could take us far. I have a lot of faith in this team. And then we proceeded to do absolutely nothing after that. We've been a play-in team ever since. So it's just like, you have to be very particular about the coaches that you bring in. I for one, like Quinn Snyder as a coach, and I would hate for him to get scapegoated just because, I mean, the Hawks really don't have an identity right now. I mean, they lack motor. So, like, a lot of the times when they play, you know, they're great in the first half, and then by the time the second half comes through, they run out of gas. So, I don't want...
Can I ask you a question real quick?
Yeah.
Not to get too off topic, but how do you feel about the recent Zachary Richardson performances, Mr. K2?
I mean, they're very promising. They're very promising. I mean, I just don't know. My thing is, like, I don't know exactly where I go from here in roster building for the Hawks because, I mean, you have a great young core to build around. You got Trey, you got JJ, you got Zachary Richardson, you got Dyson. But I think Zach has been doing great. I want to see more reps at the two just to see how malleable he is and see, you know, how we could fit him in different looks and such like that, but without having to take Dyson out of the rotation. But, and at the same time, I feel like, you know, I'm still waiting on another scoring leap from JJ. I'm still waiting for a playmaker leap from JJ before I can really call him our, you know, sky is the limit for JJ. Yeah, a lot of people are calling him like a baby LeBron, you know, in the same vein as like Ben Simmons and Paolo and stuff like that. And
did someone say Ben Simmons?
No.
My bad, bro. I didn't.
And so, you know, but when you think of coaches, I mean, firing Taylor Jenkins, it doesn't make sense to me because if you look at it, when you fire Taylor Jenkins, right, the Grizzlies are 1-3 since the Taylor Jenkins firing, only beating the Heat, and they only beat the Heat on a game winner. They allowed Stephen Curry to have 52 points on 12 threes one of these games. I mean, before Taylor Jenkins got fired, they had a defensive rating of 108.7. Right now, that would be the second best defensive rating in the league. And since firing him, they have a defensive rating of 123.9. That's dead last. So firing Taylor Jenkins, you want to know what also went out the door with Taylor Jenkins? That team's defensive identity.
That team's offense, that team's defense.
I mean, all of it. Everything left. You know, it's a great constructed roster, great young guys, great depth. I mean, I'll go more into that later. I mean, when you look at the Grizzlies, I mean, top two in points per game, top two in rebounds per game, one of the best offensive rebounding teams in the league with a Zach Edey. You feel what I'm saying? Like, they're top 10 in a lot of different metrics. They're first in bench points and top three in bench efficiency. So when you get rid of a guy like Taylor Jenkins, especially right before the play-in and the playoffs, I mean, it's a head-scratcher. If you had problems with Taylor Jenkins, then wait for the playoffs, see what happens, right? And if you don't like what you see from this team in the playoffs, get rid of him. Fuck him. Throw him up.
Matthew, what you think?
Yeah, so I'm going to play devil's advocate for a little bit. So I've been doing a little research, and I think some stats are coming up to kind of show why the Grizzlies are firing Jenkins. So since January, the Grizzlies have one win over a team that's 500. In the entire season, I think it's 5-16 against teams that are top 10. Jenkins, he's been notorious for bad rotation management. And I think you brought it up as well. It's kind of like their assistant coach right now, he's an offensive genius. And they received reports that people wanted to get him in the offseason. So obviously they see the current guy, the guy from Europe, as their next head coach. And I think they really wanted to get a head start on him and just make sure they could really retain him. And I know it's very late. Like, it's a very late firing, but I think it's kind of, from what I've seen, people kind of view this as like a Hail Mary move of like, This team's blowing leads, this team can't close games, especially against good teams. So I don't think they believe in themselves this year, especially with all the disconnect between Ja and Jenkins. And I think this is kind of a last-ditch effort to save their season, and then also kind of hit a mini reset. And I think that's a lot of the times when people are firing their coaches. While it might seem premature, I think oftentimes firing a coach is the easiest thing you can do. This is a very clear move of just replace one identity with another. Whereas fixing a team's roster is kind of oftentimes very difficult and you don't know if you're fixing the issue. And I thought that was correct to fire the coaches. I get where teams are coming from, where it's the first thing, kind of the first reaction, because it's kind of the easiest thing to do to fix the team's culture. I was wondering your guys' thoughts on that.
I mean, how do you pronounce the name? Like Tomas Lison? I don't know how to say his name.
He's Finnish. Crazy blast name.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I know he's like really big on offensive rebounding, and that's something the Grizzlies have always been big on. You know, the glass, controlling the glass is a really strong point for the Grizzlies. I don't really have too much to say on this. I mean, like, yeah, I guess you could see why they would make that move, but I feel like it's a little too late into the season to be making moves like that, especially for him as a coach, because what's going to happen next season? Like he's gotten like maybe 20 games of the season to, you know, mold, not even, it's like 10 games of the season to mold this team into his own team, win over the locker room if he didn't already have it as the new head coach. It's just a little too late into the season, I think. I mean, it doesn't really make sense, especially if they're looking to contend. I don't know. I mean, it's a Hail Mary play. I just think it's a little too late for that Hail Mary. Like, you're down 30 points in the fourth quarter. I mean, Hail Mary's not going to help you that much. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the firing, I think how I would describe it is just half-baked. I think that it's early. It's early. I think that the roster is good. So they, like you said, they kind of want to change their identity going forward, and they see this guy as somebody that's sought after in the market. But I don't know, man. Like I think there were other ways to go about it. You know, maybe they could have like Mr. K2 said, shout out Mr. K2, he said they could have fired him in the offseason. I'ma love my boy. But they could have fired him in the offseason. I mean, if you really think that your guy is that sought after, and you really think that other teams are really going to go after him like that, and they're going to want to sign him so bad, then you should be, and you like him that much, then you should be at the forefront of that conversation. You should be ready to give him what he wants. But I don't think that means you blow up the team for this year. I think you just have to fight for him in the offseason.
Yeah.
Because now you're in a situation where you fired your head coach right before the playoffs. You're in a decent playoff position. Maybe you wouldn't have won anything, but you might have seen something from the guy you already had. So, I don't know. I just think that it's a bold move. And after giving it some context, it's slightly, I guess, I can see. But, I mean, I think that it was a little early. That's how I would describe it.
For sure.
Me? I don't. Hey, listen. Like I said, you know, very premature move. I don't know. I just don't personally see the benefit with firing a guy like this. I mean, the timing is terrible. You know, you got a team who is trying to make a run at the playoffs. I mean, obviously it's hard to, you know, compete with a team like OKC already. And then when you're stripping a team of its coach and its identity so close to the play, I mean, like, literally this just happened like last week. So, I mean, and you got playoffs coming up next week, and it's just, It boggles my mind. It boggles, like, the only worst time to fire a coach is in the middle of the playoffs. And no competent team or front office would do that to their own team. So this is basically like shooting yourself in the foot. But, you know, I mean, I understand if he lost the locker room, or if you feel like he didn't, you know, if his game plans were way off, whatever. Hey, I don't watch that much Grizzlies. I mean, I've been doing a little bit of research on them for the past few days, but I would say, I mean, just wait. Just wait until your season's over. Hell, you could fire him. You could literally fire him before the last day of your season's over. You could lose a playoff game and go home, get eliminated that day. Hell, fire him right after the game. You can do that. But to do this right before the playoffs, I mean, it's straight up just stupid. That's what I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are all some great points, and we'll see how it ends up for the Grizzlies in an undoubtedly stacked West. So up next, we're going to talk about an issue that's been brought up a lot, and that's kind of the current state of the NBA media, which a lot of people are blaming for the downward trends of the NBA ratings. So I think a lot of the issue is kind of coming from the fact that the top people in the industry, like Stephen A. Smith and Shaq and Perkins, aren't really in it for talking about the sports. They're not really fans. They're kind of in it for clicks, and I think they're kind of more so viewed as entertainers. So start with you, Devon. What do you think about today's NBA's media? When you think about it, what's the biggest issue that kind of jumps out at you?
I have some thoughts on this. So yesterday, I was at work, and I was talking to my manager, and the topic of the NBA came up, And I was like, oh yeah, like the Thunder, the Thunder looks so good. You know, he doesn't know that much about the NBA. He's kind of just more like a casual fan. And I was talking about my teams and whatever, the Hawks, this and that, and the third. And he said, oh yeah, did you see that Stephen A and LeBron had a beef going on? And I was like, I think that's a perfect summary of how NBA media can impact how the NBA is viewed. I think that, especially for the casual fan, for somebody that maybe doesn't watch basketball or they just hear about it on the news, like maybe you think of your brother, your sister, your mom, maybe they don't know that much about NBA. The first thing they're going to hear is, oh yeah, Stephen A and LeBron don't like each other. The first thing they're going to hear is, oh yeah, Stephen A doesn't like Bronny. They're not going to hear about Bronny dropping 39 points because it's the G League. But I mean, they're not going to hear about that though. It just seems like in a situation like this, you'd hear about LeBron James's son doing so well, even if it's the G League, before you hear about LeBron James and Stephen A, oh, they don't like each other. And I think that,
yeah,
you know.
My bad. I thought you were.
No. Go ahead. I want to hear what you have to say.
I was just going to say, like, I hate how performative, like, people on, like, Stephen A try to act about talking about Bronny. They're like, he's in the NBA. This is how we talk about any NBA player. But he's getting more coverage than, like, 90% of the NBA. You're not giving him the fair criticism as every other player because you're sitting here talking about a G League player more than you talk about the 54 people picked ahead of him combined. So, like, it really doesn't make sense. You're sitting here like, that's what happens to NBA players. They get criticized on national television, but it's clearly not the same criticism that he's getting. And it's just a whole nother thing. I'm sorry. You can go back, even. I just had to insert that real quick.
No, and I think that's a fantastic point. I think that Bronny being in the NBA is kind of the culmination of all of this kind of NBA clicks media, you know, like that culture, because they see the greatest player of all time, the GOAT, LeBron James, his son now in the NBA, they're playing for the same organization. And they see that as an opportunity to maybe, I feel like if they focus on him, then more people will focus on their show. More people will focus on Stephen A. More people will focus on Perk. So I just think that, you know, it's hurting the NBA. It's hurting the sport. Now, maybe if people want to see it as whatever, if people want to see it as more of like a he said, she says reality type of thing, like storylines or whatever, yeah, then that's how they see it. But yeah, I think for fans of the sport, it's not very good, especially when you have smaller players. You know, you want to see people that are coming up in the league. You want to see people like the new great team, the Thunder. The Thunder is such a great team, but it's like, When the Stephen A and LeBron beef came out, it's like that was taking over the media, even though the Thunder were going up and they're about to go to the playoffs. You know, it's just a lot, man. I think it's hurting the sport.
Yeah, I really think that the thing with the media is they try to play into knowing that casual NBA fans are there more for like the drama and like the headlines and stuff. And they do a little bit more to try to get the baits and the clicks off of that than they used to, at least, I think. I mean, you see this a lot, especially with the whole Bronny thing. They're talking more about him than they are actual basketball, and it really does not make sense. And like, you could say whatever you want, but at the end of the day, he is not worth like 50% of what they're talking about on First Take. And it just gets so tiring because, like, yeah, the casual NBA fan, like, it's more of like a drama type of thing. Like, you get to hear new things, like, oh, these people have beef with each other. And like, most of the time when you're in social media comments, it's like, man, players don't hate each other anymore. Like, they're all too friendly with each other and blah, blah, this, that, and the other. It's like, they just want to see like the drama aspect of it more, because that's kind of like what you'll remember more than like the actual basketball gameplay sometimes. And yeah, that's that with that. Matthew, could you mute really quick? My bad. Anyway,
well, but, yeah, I think I have one more thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that you kind of see the NBA, or I guess sports in general, not as much the NFL, more the NBA, like sports media in general. You see it going down this path where people are so invested in the storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the storylines used to be like, oh, like, you know, Lillard and Lillard doesn't like Harden, whatever. Like, you know, like this game, like there's rivalries. You know, rivalries between the teams. Now I feel like it's more, it's almost rivalries between these players and the media.
Yeah.
And it's like, once you get to that point, it's like the NBA is going down this WWE type of path.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like generated drama between the media and like this player. And sadly, I feel like LeBron had to defend his son. He had to do whatever he had to do, but that just fed into the hype of the like fed into the fire of whatever.
And I feel like with the media, I mean, like you can like the storylines that we get these days, they're not really like there used to be storylines for teams like in their path to the finals, like and players in their path to the finals or whatever. Like with you said, what you said with Damian Lillard, he used to have the Trailblazers haven't done this his whole career. He's staying with the grind. Like they used to paint pictures about players. They don't do that anymore. They're saying they're painting like narratives about them rather than painting the picture of their path. And like they're trying to get attention of mass media in a different way than what they normally do. And it's like you can really tell they're deviating from like what we're used to seeing like growing up. Like the Warriors, are they going to win a third one? This, that, and the other. And somehow they're just not talking about things like that. They're talking about things that do not matter. They're bringing Kai Cenat on to talk basketball, to talk LeBron and Michael Jordan, when we have the Cavs having one of the best years that they've had since LeBron James left. They have OKC Thunder, generationally great team. They could win 70 games this season. I have not seen any coverage on it. You have all these teams, all these great players. You see Cade Cunningham. He's having an amazing year. You see all these players. They're having amazing years that you don't see coverage on. And it doesn't make sense. Like you would think you would hear more about these things. The Celtics, they're really good again. You don't hear, like, there's not a single narrative. There's not a single storyline that the media has painted for any of these teams. Like I could not tell you. And that's like a major part of, you know, marketing the league. Like people want to watch for storylines. They want to feel like they're connected to a team because they have this, they went through all this and they're finally getting their chance. You don't get these narratives painted anymore. And it's just like a lot of it is in a negative light these days. And it's like most casual NBA fans, they don't think anybody's going to win. Like they just want to say, oh, this team's like, they don't have genuine conversation. It's just, oh, this team sucks. This team sucks. This team sucks. It's like, who do you even think's going to win at the end of the day? Who do you even want to win? Like it does not make sense. And like, I feel like media is like playing a major part in that because, you know, there's no real sustenance to the conversation that's going on. Like,
and you know who it really hurts. I think what we don't really talk about, it hurts is the smaller market teams.
Yeah.
Like, The Trailblazers, I remember, man, when the Trailblazers were on that win streak, me and Zaha, man,
we were lit, in man. Discord, every PlayStation parties, watching right. Every Blazers game before Ayton got hurt.
Exactly. And look, you turn on First Take, are they talking about the Trailblazers?
They're not.
Trailblazers that are on a 12-game win streak?
They got Drewski on there, hitting the little brain rot dance, and exactly, it's like, bro. It doesn't make sense.
Exactly. Like, the smaller market teams are really, like, they're never going to get any coverage, and they weren't getting much coverage, but now they're getting even less coverage because we got Kai Cenat on, so we got to talk about Kai Cenat.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. And even the Rockets, that's a whole other conversation, but, like, they're having a really good season. You have so much talent in the league that does not get any coverage at all, and it doesn't make sense. I'm trying to keep it short because I know we're running a long episode right now, but, yeah.
We haven't even gotten to me yet. And because this is pretty much my topic, I would say. I don't want to, you know, kind of hijack the conversation here, but I'm definitely the one who introduced this topic. And I mean, it's going to kind of feel like I'm repeating myself a little bit, but I feel like this is a very necessary conversation to have because I already, you know, expressed my opinions on this matter on Matthew and his overnight radio show. Shout out Bates. And so what I've come to dub this as the Stephen A theory. And so I believe that the majority of the downfall of NBA media is due to the rise in popularity of Stephen A. Smith. Now, Stephen A. Smith has been doing...
Wait, you think Stephen A. is like a government psyop against like the LeBron James family?
I mean, hey, crazier things have happened. I'll tell you that. You know, we got Michael Jordan retiring because, you know, of gambling debts, but they said it was because he wanted to play baseball. So, you know, when you got things like that, I wouldn't run anything past, you know, Mickey Silver and his whole gang of Fauci COVID deep cover agents. Fauci? I'm telling you, bro, it's all a Biden conspiracy. The Biden administration is the cause of the downfall of the NBA. That's right. I said it. Damn. Them and their vaccine hoops. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. So, I mean, when you think back to, you know, over Stephen A's career,
yo, he was D-Von's first at... dying, bro. He's frozen. D-Von is frozen, bro.
Oh.
You laughed this man out of his body. He's stuck.
Well, they got me, bro.
All right, boy, you keep talking while he rejoins.
All right. And so when you look back over Stephen A's career, and you know, first off, he starts off at Fox Sports with Skip, and then he makes the transition over to ESPN. And so when you think about Stephen A. Smith and you're, you know, first seeing him probably about like 2016, 17, 18, maybe. And so you're seeing him being very loud, very lively, very excitable, very excited about the game of basketball. And I mean, it was really entertaining at first. He's very enthused about the sport. He's bringing a lot of eyes to ESPN, bringing a lot of eyes to basketball in general. He was a viral sensation, you know, very large vocabulary. This is egregious. I just can't believe it. Yeah, a lot of that. So, you know, that could be viewed as, you know, a net positive. He could be kind of be seen as like a figurehead for the company, bring more eyes. He's a viral sensation. But when you really think to the impact that that's had on the sports media in general and basketball discourse in general, I mean, really think about it. When was the last time you heard Stephen A. say the words motion, off ball, spot up, usage, true shooting, defensive rating, net rating? Like, when have you ever heard Stephen A., you know, a point of attack defense? Point, like anything, really, like help defense, help side, weak side, like things like that. He doesn't talk about things like that. When you turn on First Take at 10 a.m. in the morning, they're on there talking about, you know, you got Molly up there talking about, well, guys, what do we think? LeBron James said last night that Stephen A. needs to shut his bitch ass mouth and just let him hoop. Okay. And so, Stephen A., what do you think about these comments right here? Like, they're dedicating entire segments to Stephen A. and LeBron beef. Oh, Bronny James this. Oh, Stephen A. doesn't think that Bronny James is ready for the... do we think that, you know, what do we think about Steph Curry's legacy if he can bring his team to the... Like, we're over here talking about narratives and storylines and legacies instead of actual basketball. Like, let's talk about, like, do you think Stephen A. knows who Tumani Kamara is? Do you think he knows who that is?
I don't think he's watching play basketball.
Western Conference Player of the Month, Tumani Kamara.
Right. If I'm in Boston right now, if I drove over to New York and I went inside the ESPN studio and then I put up a picture of Tumani Kamara, Daquan Jeffries, you know, like Cole Anthony even, do you think Stephen A. would be able to identify a picture of them? No, because yeah, I mean,
you're making up these names. They're not real.
Exactly.
You're making up these names.
Jericho Sims, AJ Johnson, like guys like that. Do you think, you know, Stephen A. Smith is gonna know who they are? Probably not. Why? Because it's gotten to the point where they don't even talk about Giannis anymore. Giannis has had a historical stretch of seasons. I mean, 30 points on 60% from the field. That's unheard of. 30 points per game on 60% of the field and nothing. If we're really going to, everybody loves this voter fatigue thing. Oh, you know, they're not going to vote in Jokic because of the voter fatigue. Da, 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 da. They want Shea to win it. If we're really going to talk about voter fatigue, let's talk about Giannis, right? Two-time MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, Finals MVP, however many time All-Star, however many time All-NBA player. I mean, the guy is ridiculous. He has one of the most insane power forward resumes already at the age of 30, like I said earlier. And so when you look at that, and then you look at how sports media was influenced by that, right? You got Fox Sports. They're not really worried about you know, individual teams and how they play, their style of offense, their style of defense, even defensive anchors. They probably don't even know what that means, right? You got people in Instagram comment section saying that the word gravity is made up in a basketball sense. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? We literally just saw like one of the greatest runs from Stephen Curry all time because given off his gravity, because you have guys that are drawn in, literally physically drawn in because of how talented he is, and you can't leave him open and on an island like that. And so, and it's even gotten to the point where it's bleeding over into other sports. Like, I'm a big Bills fan. And so a lot of the conversation before the Bills and the Ravens game this past year in the playoffs was, okay, guys, whose legacy takes a bigger hit, Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson? What about the other 21 starters on each team? Like, what is it that we're doing here? And so when you see ESPN see a guy like Stephen A. get this much attention, they're going to be like, how can we capitalize off that? And so what they're going to do is they're going to take away the guys who are actually passionate about the sport. You know, you got your Scott Van Pelts. Hopefully they don't fire him, you know, and then you got your Stuart Scotts, rest in peace. Like, you got, you know, your basketball nerds that are like, oh man, you know, tonight's matchup against their small forward matchup. Oh yeah, you know, their approach is small ball to the game. That's gone in sports media. And I really don't know if we're ever going to get it back. And I feel like that's because of Stephen A. And then you got him hiring guys like Pat McAfee. I love Pat McAfee's show, right? But I mean, he doesn't really talk about the game like that. I mean, you know, he's pretty much like a storyline guy. And then you got guys like Kendrick Perkins. Kendrick Perkins doesn't know shit about basketball. Like, legitimately, this guy played like more than 10 years in the NBA, but he couldn't tell you about, if I said, okay, tell me what kind of offense that the Cleveland Cavaliers play. He would be like, well, you know, you got guys like Donovan Mitchell. You got guys like, you know, Evan Mobley. Okay, tell me their exact approach to offense. Like, how do they play off each other? What is the offensive game plan? He would be stuck there with nothing to say. Because, you know, all these guys know is storyline, narrative. Is this guy's legacy going to be affected by this game? How many more rings before we can start putting this guy in this guy convos? I mean, ESPN is Twitter now. I mean, we might as well just start calling it TSPN, bro. Twitter Sports Programming Network, bro. I mean, like, it's legit getting to a point, bro. And so I feel like we just need a complete overhaul of sports media where we put in more guys that are passionate about the actual sport. So guys like Kenny Beecham, guys like Nerd Sesh, Carson and Logan, you know, you got guys like, you know, even though it's a different sport, you know, Theo Ash and, Matthew Spawnhour, yeah, and Bladen Kirk, yeah. So, you know, guys like that. And, I mean, it's just like, we have to start being more serious about the sport if we want people to really start watching it again. If you look at the NFL, their ratings are fine. The Super Bowl is always the most watched telecast every year. The NHL is getting prepared to take over NBA here in a second. You got guys like Ovechkin who just tied the record last night. And so, I mean, and like the way that they're marketing the league is completely different. And so when you look at the NBA and you look at the way these guys are talking about it, they're hurting the sport. People aren't watching as much anymore because, I mean, what are they watching for? They're not excited about the basketball. They're excited for, okay, they can go and play the game, and then in the morning I'll see the narratives on Twitter and on ESPN. So it's like, it's a net negative, honestly. And I really believe that stems from Stephen A.
I can agree with you. And I know we don't have that much time left, Mr. Kajowski, I know. But I just want to ask you just one more question. Because whenever we talk about this, I've been thinking about it recently because of the way you talk about it so passionately, Mr. K2. I really appreciate that. But do you think that, I think that sports culture has kind of been shifting in the last few years. And I think one of the things that's contributed to that is gambling. Gambling is such a big part of sports now that I feel like that's contributing to the shift, to the narratives, to everything like that. Just because gambling has allowed a whole new side of even sports media to exist. Because think about it, ESPN, it used to be ESPN Fantasy. Now it's ESPN Bet. Now there's so many more people getting into the sports. And I feel like they're not casual fans. They're more just in it for the parlays, or they're in it for the, oh, what is this player going to do on this given night? So yeah. I feel like, I don't know. I feel like on some level that's contributing to the, we're getting away from the sport and we're more with the, oh, what, like what are we talking about in the social aspects?
Yeah. And I feel like with gambling, it's like, you got a lot of people that gamble that don't even watch. They're just like betting on like the names of players.
Exactly.
And it's like everybody's like, yeah, my parlays be hitting, but casinos made like billions of dollars last year. So somebody got to be lying about how much money they made off that shit, because it's no way everybody's parlays are hitting, like, actually. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, but we should probably move on to the next topic, because
I think all these are really good points, and I think the Steve Naismith hypothesis is kind of the way to go, because he's in the past few years, he's the face of NBA media, and it's changed for the worse because he's turning into more entertainment than actual sports takes. And I guess a really funny last example is, so around Valentine's Day, there's a whole segment about what Bronny did with his girlfriend. And I feel like if that doesn't summarize how messed up NBA media is, like, you got people dropping 30, 40 points, and they're talking about Bronny renting out a hotel room for his girlfriend. Like, why are you talking about teenagers and what they're doing? I just feel...
Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, that just surprises what's wrong with the NBA media, I think, the bongo. All right, that's it. I hope you guys enjoyed and have a great week, and tune in next time to FoosPod.
Appreciate it, man. I'll see y'all.
Make sure you put in the comments, I'm better than Toby next week.
We'll see that.
I got you.
Hopefully we got Toby and Burrell next week. So, but...
finds a phone charger by then. All right. Thank you so much for listening.
Yeah.
Ooh. Bro, how long was that?